Welcome to the High Percentage Podcast, the podcast your mother warned you about.
Welcome back to the High Percentage Podcast, and today we are talking about the opposite of what we talked about a couple weeks back when we covered the worst performance submissions in competitive jiu-jitsu. Of course, we're talking about the highest performing submissions, or should I say submission, today. High Percentage Podcast is brought to you by Keenan Cornelius' online lapel guard encyclopedia. This is a DVD or just an online portal that you can pay and get access to. It's updated from time to time. It's separate from Keenan Online and all focuses around the lapel guard. If you don't know what the lapel guard is, it's grabbing like the low lapel of someone's gi below the belt and then doing all sorts of creative stuff with it. If you like things like, the lasso guard, De La Hiva inverted guard, really any of the open guards, the lapel guard integrates with it really, really nicely. I've started to see more and more kind of mid-level blue purple belt competitors using this. Keenan's obviously been using it in tournament jiu-jitsu for a long time. I haven't seen his world matches yet. I saw the highlights, and I'll talk about that in a second, but hopefully he employed some good lapel guard stuff there. And I'm a big fan of just getting training DVDs in general and using them to kind of accelerate your training, as opposed to like maybe just cruising YouTube, where you get very disjointed, training videos that cover, kind of the highlights of certain positions. When you get DVDs or you subscribe to online portals, you get a more focused training that takes you kind of through the whole breadth of a position or a strategy. And at High Percentage, we're a big fan of that. We think specialization is the way to go. I think the data backs us up on that. And I think Keenan is a fantastic instructor, and you could do a lot worse than getting one of his programs. So if you enter the code HIGHPERCENT at checkout, that's high, the word, and the percent symbol, you'll get 10% off. It's not a cheap program too, so 10% off is a really good value, and then you'll help support the podcast too. We do pay researchers to watch fights, it costs us money to maintain the site, in addition to the usual kind of server maintenance fees and stuff like that. So if you are buying jiu-jitsu products anyways, you can click on one of the ads on highpercentagemartialarts.com and you'll support us. I try not to make this podcast very heavy on current events, because my dream is that someone a year from now will find this podcast and there'll be, over 50 episodes, and they'll just be able to listen to them all and they won't really need a lot of context about what's happening. But that said, rules are meant to be broken, so I feel like I should talk about the worlds that are happening now. I'm recording this Sunday afternoon, so they're essentially over. I haven't watched all of the matches in depth. We had a little watch party last night at my local academy and watched my coach, Elliot Kelly, compete. Had a tough match against a Brazilian, lost his first round by 2 points. It was, kind of a slower, plodding match. And, the worlds are, they're really for hardcore jiu-jitsu people. Like, it's funny if you wanted to get people that weren't interested in jiu-jitsu into jiu-jitsu, like, don't let them watch the worlds, because it's just really high-level competition, and, there's sort of strategies within strategies, and, you have to be pretty up on your current meta knowledge of jiu-jitsu, I think, to really get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And even then, maybe this is just like how I feel and other people don't, but I even feel like I have a pretty strong understanding of jiu-jitsu, and like, I still don't think Worlds is always that entertaining. I think a lot of it is just the way that the matches are structured and the rule set. My coach, his match is a great example that, it was a 7-minute match. There wasn't a ton of action. His opponent got a 2-point lead early. I think it was for a sweep, but I'm not sure. Actually, we were out, we had to run in and watch it, and I missed the first couple minutes or something. But it's a classic example of when a lot of these matches are over, you really don't feel like you got a full understanding of which competitor is better at jiu-jitsu. I mean, at this level, certainly for the black belt world champions, they're just so good that, it almost seems like an arbitrary decision sometimes that someone won, a couple points, and then they managed to sort of hold on and negate other points and advantages for the rest of the match, and then they're the winner. I think another great example of this is Keenan had two matches this year, and in his second match, he lost to Leandro Lowe, but it was off a referee's decision, and anytime a referee has to decide who wins a fight, of course it's going to be controversial, and I could see arguments for both ways, but one thing that most objective viewers would probably say is, you know, who's really better at jiu-jitsu, Keenan or Leandro Lowe? It's hard to say from that one match. It was, you wish that there would have been so much more time to really see a narrative develop and some drama develop. But the way that IBJJF tournament is designed, it's just too difficult to do that. And I think that's why IBJJF is very slowly getting eclipsed by some of these other formats like Kasai Pro or what used to be Metamoris, Polaris Grappling, EBI. Those formats are designed to kind of maximize drama, and they've done that by, one, extending the time, so there is more time for a sort of a storyline to play out during a match, but then they've also sort of changed the rule set just a little bit. And I know it seems like having no points is a big change, but I'm talking about with things like the overtime rules, the way EBI does the shootouts, that really helps sort of heighten the drama and make the sport maybe more approachable. Of course, we need IBJJF. It's funny, I saw on Reddit the other day someone was suggesting that the worlds should only be for black belts, but I really think that the IBJJF is at some point going to be kind of considered a feeder league. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful way, but, you know, younger athletes, newer athletes are going to cut their teeth on the IBJJF circuit, and then hopefully they graduate from that and go on to compete in a format where they can make some money and make a legitimate career out of jiu-jitsu, which they deserve to be able to do. But then also, have a format that values them as a competitor enough to say, hey, we're going to give you the time to definitively win this match by submission or in a point structure that makes it where there's no room for debate. You didn't just win by an advantage that, you know, different people have different opinions on, or you won by a single referee's decision. So those are my thoughts on the Worlds. I think they were great this year. I'm looking forward to going back in the Flow archives and delving into some of the more compelling matches. But for now, let's talk a little bit about submissions. Okay, so this is one of the very first questions that I wanted to answer when I started High Percentage, which was, what are the submissions that work? There's too many submissions to learn. We want to focus our time on what's going to be the most effective. So what are they? And just to tee this up, a long time ago, there's a Facebook group, I think it's called BJJ Everything. There's like 30,000 members in it. And after I had the results of this, I went on Facebook and I said, hey, what do you think is the most high percentage submissions at the white belt level? And I took screenshots and I ended up writing an article about it. And of course, it wasn't the most like scientific survey, but I think it was a pretty good pulse on the community. And what I found was really fascinating, which is, they were all over the place on what they thought were effective submissions. There was a group of maybe like five or so cores, and they were sort of what you'd expect. I think the number one that they thought was the highest percentage was maybe like the Kimura, and then after that there was the triangle. A lot of people said the Americana, the armbar was in there. A lot of people said collar choke, and essentially there was no consensus. It was really all over the place. And when I watched all the white belt matches and tracked the submissions, I expected that the Facebook group would be wrong. But what was really interesting was that instead of there being a cluster of high percentage submissions and it was just a matter of kind of ranking them, what I found is that at the white belt level, there really are no high percentage submissions. Most submissions have an over 50% fail rate. But when you look at the ones that are high percentage, there's kind of only one that really stood out as the one. It wasn't a group of them. And that submission was the armbar. So the armbar from the mount was the number one finisher of matches by a really wide margin. It was attempted 34 times in the matches that I watched, and it was successful 41% of the time. Now, if that seems like a low success rate, it's all relative, right? So actually 41%, it seems low, but that's actually 10% higher than the success rate of all submissions. Now, another thing that I noted was that submissions from the top were dramatically higher percentage than submissions from the bottom. And that 41% success rate of armbars from the top, it was still like 7% higher than submissions from the top. So amongst the top submissions, it was even higher than those two, which really makes it stand out. The other thing that stands out about the armbar is just how far behind other submissions were. So the rear naked choke technically had a 50% success rate, which on paper is a higher percentage submission, but it was only attempted, I think, like five times, or maybe it was four times and it was only successful two, but it was a low rate. So, you know, the success rate's kind of deceiving. It just, people didn't get to the back enough times. It was really the armbar was where it was at. Now, when you compare that data to what Facebook was predicting, the armbar from the top wasn't even in the Facebook group's top five picks. It was, I think, number six. So it wasn't even really on their radar. What was Facebook's top submission? Well, the consensus on Facebook was they thought it was the Kimura from the guard by a narrow margin. That's what they thought. But actually, what I found when I watched the white belt matches was, you know how many competitors finished with a Kimura from the guard? It was zero. Zero people finished what Facebook thought was the highest percentage submission. Not only was it finished zero matches, it was only attempted twice. Only attempted twice in 100 matches. So that's not an aberration. Like, that's a pretty decent sample size. We should have seen it be attempted more times. So of course, the natural question that comes next is, well, what about at the other belt levels? Is it possible that the armbar from the top is sort of the starter submission that people find success with? Maybe kind of like, I'm thinking of maybe the scissor sweep. You know, when you're in guard and you're a newer student, like, you live and die off that scissor sweep for your first couple months. But then after a while, you sort of transition to other sweeps because maybe you start looking at it as, well, that's kind of the starter sweep. Is the armbar from the mount like that? Well, we watched 150 blue belt matches. And with this, we did some in a gi and some without a gi. And guess what? The armbar was, again, the number one submission. It finished more matches than any others. It was a little bit more even. So the lesson that we learned from this is blue belts is, you know, they can attack with a larger variety of submissions. That's probably no surprise to anyone. But the armbar is still the king at that level. Now, we haven't done purple, brown, and black, but you know, when I was watching the Worlds this weekend, I mean, what were a lot of submissions? I still saw a lot of arm bars. And that might be just a little bit of, what do they call that? Bias or confirmation bias, right? So maybe I only saw what I wanted to see, but eventually we'll run the numbers on them and we'll get to it. But I can tell you that once I got this data, it made a big difference in my own training because I looked at what I saw with the information and I said, okay, like, my objective is clear. I need to really become an armbar specialist. And I did. And especially by that time, I was doing a lot more no-gi stuff. And I, you know, my goal in every match was to get them out and go for the armbar and not really confuse it with anything else. And that really paid dividends on me. It focused my training. It gave me sort of a clear objective. One of the biggest challenges that I have, especially from a position like mount, is you're kind of overwhelmed with options, particularly in a gi. And once I saw this data, I felt in a weird way like I had permission to ignore techniques that didn't fit with what I wanted to go for. So suddenly all of my game in mount revolved around getting arm bars, and it gave me a tremendous amount of focus, and I do think it was a high percentage move. And even from the bottom, I'm still focusing on armbars because armbars from the bottom for blue and white belts were kind of mediocre. They weren't at the bottom of the pack as far as their success rates, but they were, you know, somewhere in the middle. But, you know, the way I saw it is if you're going to be good at armbars, you might as well get really good at them from everywhere because that's the beauty of the armbars. You can invest a super high amount of time into it and it's going to pay dividends because the armbar is accessible from so many different positions. Compare that to the rear naked choke. If you wanted to become a real rear naked choke specialist, Well, the conditions that you need to have existing to get a rear naked choke, obviously, is you have to take the back. And taking the back is one of the most challenging things in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So you have to have several skill sets if you want to be an RNC specialist. Whereas, you know, an armbar, you can get that almost from anywhere. If you're good with the armbar, you're dangerous from everywhere. Okay, I feel like that's enough talk about the high percentage submissions. Hey, before I go, I want to keep you up on some stuff happening on the site. The guest post by Steve Kwan from the Mental Models podcast is up. Sorry, that took up like a crazy amount of time, but actually I couldn't get a picture of him. And for whatever reason, I just got hung up on that, like that everyone needs to see, you know, what people look like, even though I've never put a picture of me up on the site. So that's up now. It's a great read. And if you like it, check out him and his brother. They have a good podcast called the BJJ Mental Models podcast. I'm also, you know, I haven't put a lot of great original content besides the podcast and the live streams on the site. I apologize about that. And they're coming. We're finishing up one right now where we're looking at what's the one we're doing now? It's It's escape percentages. Yeah, that's what it is. So we are looking at the back, the mount, and the side mount, and what percentages of white belts are escaping those positions. And we're only doing the gi, but then afterwards, we're probably going to do blue belts, and we're going to compare, and maybe we'll do purple after that. What I want to do is I want to basically determine how likely are you to escape from bad positions? Because if the likelihood is very, very, very low, then that tells you about things that you need to be prioritizing, such as guard retention or just being offensive in general. Now, if they're much higher, well, that could also be useful because that tells you that, one, if you have someone, you know, if you have someone's back, you have someone's mount, maybe it's better to not attack them because that's going to open up opportunities for escape. So I'm curious to see what happens on that, because that's one of those studies that I want everything to be useful. I don't want it to just be like, oh, okay, I guess that's kind of cool. I want it to be something that you hear about or you read about it and you're like, I'm going to the gym tonight and I know what I'm going to be focusing on. So that's coming up. Also, Gold BJJ Online is still happening. I've been filming this week. I'm going to be filming hard the next couple weeks to get my Game Theory for Beginners course on there. There's going to be tons of other courses on that online platform. It's a subscription model, so I think it's $20 a month, and you get access to, I think there'll be like 10 or so different courses on there. Please don't quote me on that, but I know one of them is going to be Dean Lister teaching a course on leg locks. I know there's a lot of Dean Lister videos that are available online, but this is going to be a real structured course where he takes you through step by step. And if you are on the fence about leg locks, I'm telling you, they are powerful. You get people in, you know, these more complex leg weave positions, inside ashi, the 411. If they don't have the skill level in those positions, you will definitely be performing good and you will have serious advantages. So I'm a big fan of leg lock technology, so to speak. So Gold BJJ Online, that'll be launching July 1st, and I'm going to make that deadline no matter what. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you want to check out other stuff that I'm doing besides High Percentage Martial Arts, I'm the managing editor for an awesome site called ujujitsu.com. We post articles there twice a week. I write some of them. We have two other contributors, Jordan Fernandez and Sam Kelly. They're writing great articles. And then also I'm a Jiu-Jitsu Times writer. I usually post just once a month article on there. And I have several on there already, and I know Avery and Kim are always producing great stuff all the time, so I support Jiu-Jitsu Times, they support their writers. Finally, I have a book out on Amazon called The True Believers. It's sort of a martial arts biography. It's a fun read, it's not a training manual or anything like that, but if you're ever just looking for a quick, easy read about martial arts, True Believers on Amazon, you can look it up under my name, Lewis Martin. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. Keep training, go for those arm bars, and stay high percentage. Thanks. Bye.